Whenever you were just starting out as an entrepreneur, really trying to start your own business, was there at any point, did it kind of click for you that you knew you were ready to get started?
Yeah, that's a good question because there's that epiphany moment I think people need to have when it's like, I mean, I was obviously, at one point I wasn't born self-employed. I was subject to the same brainwashing as everybody else. You've got to go to school, get good grades so you can get a job with benefits and so on. So that's what I did. And you may or may not know that anyone listening that I was in a former life, I was an airline pilot. So my job was, to fly planes, and I thought that was it. I was set, for a good, great career, rest of my life. So in many ways, I mean, I was a bit disadvantaged in terms of motivation because I had a good place I was already at. I think a lot of people they don't like their jobs, and that's a great push factor, a good motivator, to do something else. But I was happy. I think what it was for me was I'll tell you exactly. It's a great question. I'll tell you exactly what it was because it was flying the plane to places like the south of France, and I used to fly over beautiful houses and see another life, and these beautiful boats, and from the air I could see another life, and then everybody sees that, of course. We're driving around, you see different houses, different cars, and you see another life. But I think a lot of people, too many people, become annoyed by that sight instead of aspiring to get it themselves. So I think that's the first thing. When I see these things, when I saw those things, I wasn't, irritated or trying to say that they were mean, those rich people must be dishonest or something. I just looked at it and thought, great, how can I do that too? And I think that's a lost mentality more and more, in recent years. We've
Yeah,
got
sure.
this move, it's got more of an entitled socialist kind of mindset that's crept in, and hopefully that will start, changing again now as we start to embrace entrepreneurship, which is, after all, what this country was, built on.
Right.
So that was that first moment. I think there's that decision point when you've got to say, okay, that there's more for me here, and I'm gonna explore this option, And then it was there's this, but then once you've done that and you've got a secure job. And probably like me, I had bills to pay, I've got a family to support, and what are you going to do? You're just going to give up your job, walk away, and go do something else? I mean, there's
Right.
no way. And that's that. It's not a irrational fear that stops you doing that. It's a perfectly rational one. You have responsibilities. You can't do that. So I would suggest to do what I did, and that's don't give up your day job. Right, start a home business, which is always going to be more successful anyway because you don't have all the overheads and the risk and so on. And that's exactly what I did, and it was the publishing business. And the very first information product I created was a manual, a self-help manual on how to become an airline pilot because I was writing from what I knew about, and I put a little ad out in a pilot flying enthusiast magazine and got a nice little income. And from there, that's when I got into other things. I read more and learned more and stocks and things like that. And I started, expanding the publishing. Don't give up your day job. Start at home in your spare time. Write from a position of strength. Do something with a position of strength, something you know about, something you're comfortable on, So we're not talking about that drastic step of leaving your job. We're talking that baby step. We're not, at a time. And then just let it grow and just keep on and just ramping up. Don't be happy with just this little pocket money, whatever you're getting. Then expand that business, do other things, get other branches going. Maybe you get someone else to help you. And then of course, then you reach that. And then, well, then what happened? I'll tell you. And I was very reluctant to give up. I had a great job and I still had bills to support and had a, and so on. But then, so what I did was the next baby step I took to kind of, I didn't cut the apron strings. I just gently sort of let them go
Right.
steadily. So the next thing I did was to go part time. I requested, can I do half the time and get half the money? And they had to agree legally. Interesting enough, because you can't offer it to women and not men, because they had to offer it to women for other things.
Oh,
So I exploited that little loophole
wow.
and went part time. So there's that baby step again. The point I'm making is that you see, I was one step at a time, because that rational fear, it wasn't going away. And then I think that the big moment for me came was the business then had reached such a point that I remember the exact day. This is a great question, you know, because I don't think I've talked about this before. I remember the exact day when I'd made that final step to do what you're talking about. And it was, I was on one of my days off and I was due to go to work tomorrow. And that morning I had done a joint venture mm-hmm. with another person in the information publishing business. And literally a 10-minute phone conversation had resulted in, because of an email campaign went out straight away, an hour later in an income of like 50,000 or so, which was what, more than I was making in a year part-time as an airline pilot. So that was one thing. But then it was almost like fate had organized this, because literally it was like that a minute after I'd heard that, I'd had the operations department call me up and say, oh, we knew you were going to be late shift tomorrow, but now you're going to be early shift. Okay, sorry to mess you around. And this was a regular thing. It used to really piss me off. You make plans and they keep messing you around, and some, you know, young guy talking to you like you're dirt, telling you what you're going to do tomorrow. And I just thought, that's it. I'm done. You know, I've just earned more in a 10-minute phone call than I do an entire year of this shit, you know?
Yeah.
Excuse my French. And that was it. I went.
Sounds like it was kind of boiling over, and then finally just that tipping point pushed you over the edge.
Yeah, it's a gradual thing, and you know, but I wouldn't have done that as I'd not was in that position of strength.
Right.
And that confidence level to, like, you know, I can do this by myself, you know. Life is too short to do just one thing or be good at just one thing, you know. And that was that it says exactly right. There are moments that, you know, there are these epiphanies, and they, if you, you know, they happen in stages, and if you follow that instinct, that epiphany, that moment, that's the universe communicating with you and telling you, look at this, you know, check this out, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it all really lined up rather incredibly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's some fantastic insight there, Jim. My first question for you is kind of twofold, and you already touched on this a little bit. But when approaching a new business idea or a new project, what sort of steps do you take, and what sort of deadlines do you set for yourself, if any?
I think any new business venture, and anyone who's done gone on my seminars will know this, is that the very first thing you have to consider is there a hungry, very hungry marketplace for this product? Does this, because the business, I imagine, it's a brand new venture that I haven't heard of before. And the first thing I want to know about, you know, is what massive problem is this service or product going to solve, you know?
Right.
If it doesn't do that, if people, you know, if people don't wake up that morning and this is something people desperately have to have, then, you know, I will lose interest. So that's the other thing. I also look at, you know, if it doesn't immediately solve a massive problem, it isn't a brilliant product or service, you know, is there something that's missing here that, if, you know, I can see the potential, though, I could, you know, if I use my imagination with this, I might see something there, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think let's just rewind a second. The first thing is, you know, keep an open mind to all opportunities. If, I mean, I get people regularly saying, I've got this business idea or that business idea, and you know, would you be interested? I mean, I'll always listen, you know, because, you know, it could be really, really great. You know, and sometimes you'll pursue these things, and don't part with any money, though, ideally, until, you know, you've really slept on this, and, you know, don't be hasty with your checkbook, and, you know, let it really consider it. Look at who else is out there. Now, here's another thing, because a lot of people, I think, are put off by doing something if there's already competition out there doing it.
Right.
And there's two ways of looking at that. If it's a truly innovative idea that solves a real problem and there's nobody else doing it, then that could be a really nice opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the time you'll find that, you know, this is another type of product or service in an arena where someone else is doing it. And that's okay, because as long as it's, you know, fits the criteria of solving a problem, there's a hungry marketplace for it, it's okay that there's a reason why lots of other people are doing it.
Right.
Because this is a hungry marketplace. There's money being made. So I'm not put off by that. But, you know, again, look at And if it is a crowded marketplace, and sometimes it will be, look at niche marketing. Look at a way of, okay, I'm going to join this party, but I'm going to do a different little spin on it. You know, there's a different, you know, they could special. Okay, I can see some specializing in this. You know, this was a big business that's made by, I don't know who it is in America, the equivalent, but in the UK it's called Quick Fit, and it's basically the people who do just tires and mufflers. Who would that be here? Like a
Midas.
Like a Midas or something. Yeah, so like and what it was is that once upon a time, the automotive industry was just a garage, just service departments who would do everything for your cars. And then one guy just comes along and thought, you know what, I'm just going to take the bread and butter. I just want, the regular stuff that makes the money, the cream, which take off the cream. So instead of getting into that marketplace, I'm just going to specialize in tires, mufflers, and so on, the high volume stuff, and that's just one example, and you could apply this to all sorts of things. If there's a crowded marketplace in it, but it is obviously a good place to be, come up with a different twist on it or specialize in a certain aspect of it, and again, it's good if you can come from a point, home ground, something that you know about already, something that you're passionate about, a hobby maybe, or something that you can turn into a business,
Yeah, absolutely.
And how do you feel about setting deadlines for yourself to get things done? I mean, obviously creativity needs time to breathe and, and all that, but
yeah, I mean, that is, anyone who's been listening to these calls or again, see me speak will know, deadlines are just one of my pet rants about having, a goal isn't a goal without a deadline. You must have a deadline. Now, having said that, and this is one of the things I have to be careful of personally, due to my personality of let's go get them, is that, you can't let that lead to, okay, I've got to have, there's a deadline, let's say by the 1st of March, I've got to have this in place, right?
Mm-hmm.
That can, now, I would say most people have the other problem. They won't even set a deadline and religiously stick to it. I'll just say that first, is that if so, you must do that. But when you have got that in place, still, don't let that lead to making a poor decision because I said I would have to have that done by then, right? Deadlines can be moved, but not from, purely because I'm being lazy, right? I can't be bothered, right? It's because, no, I set the deadline wrong. I need more time to research. I don't want to mess this up. And that's fine, But do set a deadline in the first place. You must make it a reasonable one. Stick to it if possible, but don't be frightened to bail out or adjust the deadline if it's not going according to plan,
Of course, you don't want to suffocate your idea. You want to let it grow.
On the creative side of things, if you are doing some purely creative work, then deadlines are extremely hard because I have to be very generous with those deadlines and very flexible with them because, now we're all creative. We all come up with ideas, and I go over this in some of my material and seminars and everything. It's just, we were all born creative. We were given at school a blank paper and crayons, and by the time we leave school, we walk away with black biro and lined paper, and we have to stay within the lines. That's what the institutions do to your creativity. Yeah. But it's all there still, just waiting to escape. And we've all experienced moments of inexplicably I just have to do this drawing. I know Mark, for example, you'll just make like that metal sculpture. You just, just inspired to just do it, Probably saving money as well because you've seen one expensive. I can do that, right? But, we're all creative in some way and we all have ideas. One thing I've noticed is that some of our customers actually say they're not creative, but when it comes to coming up with reasons why something can't be done or why they need to get their money back for something, their creativity knows no bounds. So everyone's creative. Now,
art is in the eye of its beholder now.
Yes, that's it. And it is. It's truly, art is absolutely subjective. But you can't. So once you realize that, yes, I am creative. I just need to tune into the frequency of which I want to create in, absorb lots of information on that subject, come up with an idea. But you can't rush that process. In fact, I was just talking with you the other day, Jordan, about the we all heard the phrase eureka.
Mm-hmm.
Eureka, that moment of the light bulb goes on. I've got the idea. Mm. Brilliant. Got it. Excellent. No, the story of Eureka was, it's, I don't know if you remember, but Archimedes, the Greek philosopher scientist, was actually, who discovered the theory of displacement in water. Like, it sounds obvious to us now, but
right.
when he put an object in the water level rises. The theory, that's a displacement theory. He was in the bath, or having a bath,
right.
when he came up with this moment of displacement theory, and he shouted Eureka, which is Greek for, you know, kind of, I got it.
Yeah.
Now, why was that? That came at a moment of relaxation. Which is why some of the best ideas come to us, if you notice, when you're in the shower, in the bath, at 3 a.m. in the morning, which is why I keep a notepad and pen next to my bed, and because you're relaxed. But that can only come after tuning into a certain frequency that I want to create something like this along these lines for this market, and then researching all you can about it, feeding, giving yourself those raw materials to start putting the machine, and then letting the subconscious mind, because it all happens in the subconscious mind, go to work. And that happens without you. And the subconscious really only expresses itself when you're relaxed or in the middle of the night when your dreams are in process, which obviously comes from the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So to cut a long story short, you can't rush that process.
Right.
You can nurture it. You can help it along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fantastic. And Mark, now I know, like, Jordan and I are coming from a place where we're, you know, striving to reach these levels that you guys are at. You're already there along with Jim. So we would just want you to have some questions from the readers that they've been sending in.
Yeah, absolutely. Straight from the customer service center, Mr. D. Moffitt. He asks, for the average person, what's the best sort of business to start? And especially if you're only starting with a little bit of capital.
Well, I mean, I will say this. I sound like a stuck record, but it's because it's the right answer to that question. Home business, information publishing.
Yep.
You know, and that's not because we've got this great product that makes you a partner with us. I'm even without that, I'm just telling you now, if it was my mother asking me that question, I'd say the same thing, and I have asked her this question, you know?
Yeah.
Home business. Start from small and information publishing.
Mm.
For many reasons already discussed on the call, but you know, to in summary, it's great. It's a hungry audience. People want information, especially about wealth and health and all this stuff. And especially if you're interested in those things yourself, it can be very high margins in information products. And there's easy channels to access these people through internet and direct mail and things like that. And you can start small, very small as you like, with a few $100, $1,000, whatever, and then build up by reinvesting the profits. And before you know it, which is what happened to me, you know, then you've got an enterprise that, you know, you just can't handle anymore, you know?
Yeah.
I remember that one moment for me when I was running it from home, and like I was mailing all these things out to information products to people from my house, and I had to go to the post office and arrange a special pickup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you know, literally one day my wife couldn't get through the front door because of all these sacks of parcels, and she lost it, and I was like, okay, you know, I have to get, you know, a fulfillment house to So it will happen organically. But a lot, I think, just to, you know, digress for a second on that, I mean, a lot of people worry about all this stuff too early on. They'll start stressing about fulfillment and all these problems that they don't yet have, like who's going to pack all these things, what about tax and all this other stuff, and then, you know, that stops them getting started. Just take it one step at a time, just deal with the problem I have today, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah, and that pretty much answers the next question I had as well. Which is, I mean, a lot of people are always worried about why so many like new restaurants fail almost immediately and things like that. But it's really kind of the overhead that you're stuck with, the fact that you can't start small and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, most businesses, you better kiss goodbye to $100,000 or so before you. And that's on the low side, I'd say, these days.
And if you start from home, then it's definitely doable because you don't have all this overhead. You're already paying it.
What kills businesses is, you know, you've got to they're servicing debt and they think they've got a higher staff from day one. And
I hear I hear a lot of like new entrepreneurs who are like, oh, I've got to get an office, you know, and I've got to worry about the, getting a nice printer and spend all this money on stationery and stuff. No, you just need to get started. You can start small and you can have, you know, just what makes do just until you can get to that next level.
Right. You know, yeah. And I think what's behind that, well, I can't start yet because I need a printer and I need to research printers and I don't. These are all just excuses to stop yourself getting started. Yeah. And that's what's behind a lot of it. And if you can, you know, you see this all the time with people, you know, and if you confront them with that, they'll just find something else to do.
I mean, we go through printers all the time.
Yeah, we sure do. Yeah, and when they often break, and we don't worry about researching a new one, we just blow up the old one.
That's correct.
And just go and buy a new one. It's not a big deal, you know. I mean, prioritize. You know what I mean? It's like you're in business. You want to make money, okay? Stop fretting over the little stuff. You know.
Absolutely.
I just wanted to, you know, we've had all these ideas from you, Jim, and I want to kind of zoom in, and I want to know what you would pinpoint as the most important thing to keep in mind for those of us who want to become successful entrepreneurs in the future.
Yeah, these are all great questions today. And as I say, I must say, I didn't know any of these questions. It's not rehearsed, so it's somebody's really sort of put me on the spot, which is great. So
what we like to do, you know.
Yeah. So,
just the most important aspect, you know, maybe from the start, you know, for me and Sean more specifically, we've got this idea, we want to become successful entrepreneurs or our own business, we want to be able to, you know, run our own show. What is the one thing?
I'll tell you what it is, and it's, well, it's my if I could only keep one quality, one secret, if you like, it would be this one, and it's something you guys know about, because you will see it all the time. It's literally, look, if you want something, be sure that you want it. And once you're sure of that, it's do or die. Mm-hmm. That's it. Do or die. Failure is not an option. And it's that simple.
Yeah. I can tell you firsthand. We've seen that live. Right. Yeah, we know.
Well, you know about that. Yeah, because, I mean, you guys, we're all in the office here, and you'll see that mentality going on all the time. You know, it's just simply unacceptable to not succeed, you know.
And you've also talked about, you know, referencing, you know, like being in a boxing ring sometimes, where you just keep on getting punched and knocked down right. knocked down.
Yeah, and if you have that mentality, you see, it's those punches, you won't even feel them.
Yeah, you just know? Get back up.
And if you get knocked on your ass, then, yeah, you just, I don't care. I'm not even seeing what's happening here, because I'm just coming at you. In fact, we have a monument to this in our office, where we have, when we were, you know, this business was first starting, especially when you start things, you come up with all these obstacles. And I thought it'd be a cool idea to kind of, like, you know, like a World War II bomber, every time they went on a, you know, they did a raid or shot a fire, enemy fighter down, they put a sticker on the front of their plane. We had a thing here with my desk.
Yeah.
And this is a great thing for you to do, you know, when you're just starting, is listen, every time I encounter adversity, especially when I'm starting, because that's when you're going to encounter the most, whether it be from a skeptical friend or someone, a vendor you need, or people messing you around.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to put a sticker on the side of, slap a sticker on the side of my desk. It's like that. And I've just overcome that problem. Mm-hmm. And anytime you see another problem, you say, we still say it, don't we? It's just another sticker.
Another sticker on the desk.
Another day, another sticker. And then you overcome that adversity, and you put a sticker on the side of your desk as a monument to that.
And literally, the stickers have almost...
I stopped doing it because my desk would have been covered in stickers.
Absolutely. Yeah. But if you would have stopped because of one of those stickers at some point, this wouldn't exist anymore. You know, it would have ceased.
Yeah, and I must tell you, I mean, my whole life, I have encountered and overcome adversity, not because I'm clever or cool, but simply because laser beam focus and the do or die attitude, you don't even hear. And sometimes it's a bad thing. You can get tunnel vision. You don't even hear the adversity or pay any attention to it. It's, you're on a mission and nothing's going to get in the way. All my life, I mean, I'm going to, you know, whatever it is I've said I want to do, being an airline pilot, everyone's going to tell you can't do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to tell you it can't be done. But, you know, what always kept me going was I would ask myself a question. How is this person qualified to say that? Mm-hmm. If this person themselves, for example, was an airline pilot and telling me, well, I don't think you can be an airline pilot, he's going to be more qualified than the average person to say that. But even then, I'm not going to listen to the guy, you know?
Yeah.
Unless, you know, literally, you're talking about something real physical, like, you know, I'm blind, okay? okay, and someone tells me you can't be an airline pilot, okay, I'll buy that. So it has to be believable. Now, and again, just to go to the other side of the coin with this, because you know, there's a spectrum of here. There's also people. Now, belief is one thing. Belief you're going to do it. Belief you can do it. But then there's this. Then there's fantasy, and you mustn't cross over into fantasy. For example, if I said, "Well, I want to be an airline pilot when I'm blind," okay, that's fantasy, right? There's no amount of positive thinking or do or die attitude is going to change that reality, true, yes. Right? Now, you see this show, The American Idol or whatever, have you ever seen that? And you see these people come on in the auditions, right?
Yeah.
And they you can see it in their face. They're dead serious and they honestly believe they can sing or dance or whatever. And they're like terrible and the audience is falling about laughing.
It's hard to watch.
But you can see in their face notes they've been told or in their mind they believe.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no amount of belief that's going to change the fact that you just can't sing. And you see the shock when the judges tell them this. You know, it's so there is this balance.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, and that can be heartbreaking to watch. No, you have one more question from a listener here, Mark.
Yeah, we do. What advice would you have for someone who maybe has a great idea for a business but is reluctant to commit to it?
So you have a great idea for a business but you're reluctant to commit to it. Well, then I think you've got to start looking at look in the mirror, and one of two things are going on here. Either the business idea isn't good, mm-hmm. and you're actually mistaken. There's something nagging you about it, in which case, you know, then you've got to look at it again, research it more. But if you find on that analysis that, you know, no, it is a good business idea, then what's the other thing that could be stopping you? Well, then that's you. It's probably fear.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of failure, I would say, is the thing that holds most people back.
Yeah, we've heard this a lot from
because,
members.
Because you've been told this since a child. We have a system, a school system that punishes failure instead of rewarding failure. Because you see, if you're failing at something, it means you're trying to do something, right? You can't fail at anything unless you're trying to do something. And if you're not trying to do something, then how is anything going to be accomplished, right? So again, there's a lot of this undoing what's been done to you mm-hmm. by the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reclaim your creativity, you know, stop being frightened of failure. Failure is not a bad thing. Failure means you are doing mm-hmm. something, okay? Mm-hmm. And yes, of course it sucks to fail, right? And I can give you all the, you know, slogans and quotes about how, you know, you got to keep getting up again and every failure is a stepping stone to success. But it's true, you know. If you're failing at something, if you are learning, and this is a very important part about what we do with direct marketing, you know, if you want to get into information publishing, direct marketing, you better get used to failure. And you better start embracing failure and treating it, more importantly, as a learning exercise for what you did wrong. Because when you know what not to do, you'll figure out what to do. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important part about testing, isn't it, with direct marketing?
Of course.
You know? Right. You're narrowing it down all the time about, okay, that didn't work, so this mm-hmm. must work.
And I know we could go on talking about this all day. You know, we've got so much information, there's so much to learn, which is what's so great about this business. But I know Mark got one last question from someone who emailed in.
Yep.
For us.
We've got part of the gold strategy from Bankrater has been simplifying. It's a good time to buy gold miners recently. Are there any gold miner stocks that you're interested in at this moment?
We've been monitoring. Here's what happens. The gold miners tend to lead the actual gold metal in terms of the direction of things. And one thing we've been observing lately is the junior gold miners, the ticker mm-hmm. symbol GDXJ, mm-hmm. has made positive moves and broken back above the 40-week average line, which is something we look for. And the senior miners seem to be following. We had a little bit of a setback last week, but yeah. I don't know what's doing. The market's doing this morning. I haven't checked. But we've got our eye on the one stock I think that was most resilient before the correction, which was Royal Gold,
right.
Ticker symbol RGLD, Romeo Golf Lima Delta, because that was most resilient last time. It looks to be the strongest one coming back this time. I would like to see that close above the 40-week line on Friday.
Right.
I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, that was one we were watching as gold was sinking. We just kept watching RGLD, and it was just seemed to be floating above the
water. One, I don't know how that one held up when everything else was sinking, which is a good sign because it means there's less selling pressure.
Right.
So it means that's a resilient. That's a good way of seeing what's a resilient stock or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely worth keeping an eye on there.